Sometimes people say to me, Pastor Jeff, how do you know there's a God? And I say it's simple math. God either exists or he doesn't. So let's be cynical. Worst case scenario, there's a 50-50 chance. And I like those odds.
That's wrong.
That's a clip from Young Sheldon, a TV show about a brainiac kid who likes to tell adults how stupid they are and how smart he is for following science and logic.
You've confused possibilities with probabilities. According to your analogy, when I go home, I might find $1 million on my bed, or I might not. In what universe is that 50-50?
Now, if you've listened to this show very much, you know that the science versus religion debate, non-debate, is an itch that I just can't resist scratching. And when I say, is Christianity worth saving? Why is it necessary? I mean, it's really cool that if you travel to a foreign country and get really sick, that you have a network that you can tie into. That's awesome on a practical level. But on a spiritual level, if that is based on some things that are not true in the way that we normally think about things being true, have you kind of made some compromises there that may inhibit your spiritual growth?
I struggled with that question. Why don't I study Sufism or pick up Zen Buddhism?
That's Brian Nasheed from the Bad Venice podcast. Brian's a young guy in his early 20s who joined me today to rehash these questions about Christianity and about whether, regardless of whether or not it can hold up to the scrutiny of Young Sheldon, it might still offer a language with which to access the very real, scientifically established realms of extended consciousness.
The answer that I came up with was, because the Christian language that I grew up with is the most accessible language for me to interact with the spiritual.
Stick around. My interview with Brian and Anthony from the Bad Venice podcast is coming up on Skeptico. Today we welcome Brian and Anthony from the Bad Venice podcast, two young guys who are really blazing a new trail in the progressive Christian movement. I met Brian a few months ago and he helped me out a great deal with some skeptical projects. And then I was super excited to hear that he had started his own podcast. And along with Anthony, I listened to a couple of them and I thought they were so relevant to some of the topics that I've been haranguing people about lately that I really wanted to have these guys on. We had a little pre-interview chat and that went great. So I'm excited to have both of you guys here. Thanks for joining me on Skeptico.
Thanks so much for having us in our cartoonishly large headphones.
Yeah, thank you very much. This is quite an honor.
Wow. Honor. Jeez. Mm-hmm. Great. Well, I tell you what, I don't know about that. We'll see how we all feel at the end. But I do say I really did enjoy the Bad Venice, the episodes that I've listened to. I think you guys have a great vibe and a great way of working together. And I think you have a fresh approach to these topics. So let's start. Just tell folks a little bit, each one of you, about who you are and how you came to do this podcast, maybe.
We both grew up in the Seventh-day Adventist Church, which is in a very American Protestant conservative denomination. And it kind of, it's an institution that raised us. I grew up going to private Christian school, Adventist academies. And so the Seventh-day Adventist Church pretty much raised us. Anthony's family converted when he was very young. I come from ethnically diverse background, and so I feel like I'm more Adventist than I am any of my respective heritages. And so we met in college. He graduated the year I started going to UC Berkeley, and we met each other at the church there. And it's a lovely little hub of very liberal people in a very conservative
enclave.
Yeah. Little enclave. Yeah.
Yeah. And it seems kind of like a surreal place because like Brian mentioned, we are the denomination is very conservative, almost laughingly so. And the Berkeley Enclave, the Berkeley group is so diverse, so progressive, so exciting. And to talk to it, to be around, and they're, in my opinion, we're all very sincere Adventists, that we really want to be Adventist. And by anyone else's metric, by the church's own metric, I don't think we'd make the cut.
Yeah.
and we've decided to sort of amend the metric and just, okay, we're Adventist.
And these are topics and issues that we talk about normally. And so we just decided, let's turn on a microphone and try to find other people like us.
And in doing so, I think Brian and I have sort of had to flesh out kind of what we believe and kind of what our journeys have been. And sometimes we disagree, and sometimes we're surprised by the fact that we disagree. Sometimes we don't disagree. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's been an interesting journey.
Mm-hmm.
And we're also technically funded.
Right. I don't know how Brian hoodwinked the conference to do that.
We have like a small stipend from the church for this, and the running joke is, how long can we go on until we lose
it's
that?
It's mostly symbolic. I mean, it's small, but it's this, because they've sort of embraced us as like, oh, you guys are really cool, and like, you provide a space. You provide a space for people to question and doubt without leaving. So they're very concerned about retention, especially of millennials. And I don't think they know how to talk to millennials. And so they're like, you guys talk to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how much we actually talk to them, but we do, compared to, you know, the other Adventist podcasts, I do think that we're honest and we're fresh. And we're not just trying to rehash church policy and with young faces.
Yeah.
Certainly not from what I've heard. Mm-hmm. But hey, that's all really super refreshing. And it's, like I said, it's at the edge of these issues that I care about and I try and bring forward on Skeptico. And I just think your background is interesting. I mean, you guys are very well educated, Berkeley, you know, Anthony, you were just telling us you're an attorney. Brian, I don't want to go into your job, but you're a professional. You're working hard on your career. So it's just kind of cool that we're going to get into it in a minute, but Seventh-day Adventist, immediately there's a knee-jerk reaction from people about preconceived notions about what that religion is. Some of them are true, and I'm going to push you on those, and some of those you're going to have to kind of handle. But isn't it cool that you're willing and able to go there? And I think that's terrific. So, but before we go there, you know, you've given us a little bit of a background. I've started asking people kind of this one question kind of thing, and it's actually two questions. But since Skeptico is a show about science and spirituality, I wonder if each of you can share with us a profound experience that you had, either in science/reason, something that you gained through, you know, standard science or learning and said, wow, you know, now I really am opened up in a way, and or a profound spiritual experience that really transformed you in some way. So putting you on the spot here, but there's kind of no pressure. Anything pop to mind about a one of those types of experiences?
Could I say today's?
You can say today's.
Yeah. So just today I had I've been finding the language for it recently. Thanks to Skeptico, thanks to Gordon White, thanks to Connor Habib. I've had like this kind of synchronistic journey today, where last night I had this dream of my grandparents' home, and I'm the afternoon delivery boy at my office job also. And I was
millennial struggling.
Yeah,
this is good. struggle's real.
And I was given like this one package to deliver to a place I've never been to before that took me right by my grandparents' home. It's like an hour away from the office. And in the dream, there were like these birds with like bright red, and driving up, there were these vultures with their bright red faces. And there's just this sense of like emotional, sentimental, but also like, I don't know, transcendent, like weight to, I don't know what's going to happen next. And the house, my grandparents have passed away, and I've been having some other synchronicities relating to them recently in the last year or so. And their house is in a small gated community, and I tried I don't know the code. I tried to go up and I looked at the call box in the directory, and our family name was still listed. So I pressed call, and then I just hear this like big smiling voice of my dad saying hi. And I thought that it was calling directly to him, but it was a recording that he had set up, I don't know how long ago. And then nothing happened. I couldn't get inside. And so just, I called my dad, and I haven't talked to him in several weeks. And like the last year or so has been like a little tense between us. And so this feels, it felt like a very universal cosmic sign to just like talk to your dad. And I don't, like, that just happened today. So I feel like something's still going on with it. And I kind of want to share it for that reason. But nice. But if anyone has any peacock synchronicities, those also showed up, and I'd love to connect about those.
Yeah, we've also had one experience where we were on top of a mountain
on a full moon.
Around a full moon, doing a ritual, and what I think was this huge
an owl bird flew like straight in front of Anthony's
owls
face.
Owls are my like sort of spirit. As you, I don't know if you can see, but there's a bunch of owls in my office. Just a bunch of owls. That's kind of my like spirit animal. So owls, peacocks.
Yeah, and
speak to you.
And apart from like the kind of hormonal like praise music, like the moment where everyone lifts their hands in the air, which is very rare in the Adventist church.
Yes.
But I feel like a lot of I don't know, it feels like a lot of those spiritually impactful moments happen outside of your recognized religious worldview. Mm-hmm. And a lot of Adventists have experience with that too, where they talk about, oh, there was an angel, you know, like someone helped them when their car broke down in the middle mm-hmm. of the night, and then they disappeared. And so it feels like there's a lot of experience with something happened that shouldn't have happened.
On the edges, you know, like
on the edges, whispers. Outside of the edges.
Yeah, yeah.
And I guess one thing that I want to do with our podcast is to learn how to talk about those instances more, those mystical experiences.
Mm. What about the other side of that? What about the scientific, rational, logical side that might have propelled you forward or shifted you in a way? Anything you can relate to there? Something that you learned that changed the way you view the world?
I mean,
no.
I went to law school, so law school is just founded in, you know, reason. I mean, it tells us it is right, and it wants us to view the world strictly from that point. And on the best days, we get to do that, I guess. Mm-hmm.
And that is helpful at mm-hmm. different moments. Like at the beginning of college, I was struggling very much with like, you know, there has to be some spiritual meaning to the world. And yet, does it have to be this sexist, racist book that we've inherited like,
or,
from the last
like,
couple of millennia?
Where I get that like deep resonance is when, this is very nerdy, I know, but when I listen to or I read like a groundbreaking case, like RBG, when she was like in front of the 10th Circuit. Mm-hmm. This is very arcane, but it's the basis of the new movie about her. And she uses the same logic and reason that put her and her gender in oppression. And she uses that to sort of wiggle her way out and break.
Now, who is this?
Ruth Bader Ginsburg. When she, okay. Before she became a Supreme Court justice, she was arguing a case in front of the 10th Circuit, and that became precedent. And you know how when the system works, and it's very slow and it's very rare, but you see her doing it, and it's like, wow, that's insane. And that at our best is what we're supposed to do.
Yeah, wiggle out or you know, have a UFO experience that just takes you out of it all. But in regards to like science and, I don't know, the rational, on our journey, Sam Harris and Jordan Peterson has helped us get us out of a couple of
slumps.
We're
going to get disqualified now.
And then, you know, these are stepping stones that you move past eventually.
Yesterday, two high school students got disqualified for using Jordan Peterson as a
I saw source. That somewhere. Now we're glad we're past it. But, you know, there were lessons to be learned that, you know, they helped us in a couple of, couple of slumps.
Sure.
Nice. One of the goals of this show is to kind of traverse that path that I think so many of us not only follow, but flip back and forth to, and that's the rational, logical, help me make this make sense. I'm a smart person. I can think through this. And the supernatural, which so many people are afraid to go there, but we can't explain our transformative spiritual experiences in the rational. That's at least my conclusion. That's my rational conclusion about the irrational. So I love that we've kind of traversed that territory a little bit. Okay, so I said we would talk about this, and
I'm actually very excited about this next topic.
This slide is
great,
fun.
Great. Yeah. Jump into it, because I think it is tough for people. I remember the first time I talked to Brian, and he told me Seventh-day Adventist. I said, yeah, but that's a cult, right? Church. I said that because I like to be provocative, and I like to poke people really hard and see what their comeback was.
Yeah,
I'd like Brian immediately, because his comeback was, yeah, some people see it that way, but it really isn't that way, but was open to understanding why there is that perception and how people might form that perception. And take it away, guys. Fact versus fiction.
That well, just off the bat, we do have a prophetess, Ellen G. White. She's sort of the founder, not the founder, but she's the spiritual founder.
The spiritual leader, yeah.
And I always feel weird saying that to people, because it's so weird. It's so weird. The other denomination that has a cult are the Mormons, right? They have a prophet. I think I always, in talking about this, I always differentiate. We don't have a whole separate book of Adventism. I mean, she wrote a lot of books, but they're usually just commentaries. Adventists have really taken to her and her writings, and sort of have made it a cult about her. It was
at times.
Her home, actually, her home is here in Northern California. Her final home.
Yeah, and I might have passed it actually on my mystical journey.
And it's sort of a pilgrimage site for a lot of Adventists, and her relatives still are there.
And if you were to ask anyone about it, they would say, "Oh no! She was just a an inspired woman," and they would.
An Adventist would say that she has a spirit of prophecy.
Right.
Well, but we do have to take a step back, though, guys, because a lot of people are coming in cold, and they just really have no idea, or there are these people who have knocked on their door incessantly kind of thing, or, running. So you're Protestant. I mean, you're Protestant from, so you're kind of recognized Christians, first of all. You're not kind of outsiders or anything like that. And you come from a kind of conservative bent, and you said there was this kind of prophecy upstate New York, mid-1800s, everyone's kind of, this spirituality is kind of churning out all these magnificent thoughts and spiritual traditions, and one of them that emerges is you all at the 17th, and it's kind of has a little bit of an apocalyptic feel to it, which, Christianity, all these are threads in Christianity. I'm not like pulling you guys out and saying, you can find that.
Particularly apocalyptic overtones, though. Yeah.
So then pick it up from there. What other kind of big picture things would people.
It's funny that so obviously we'll reject the whole cult thing, but we are very proud of the fact that we're peculiar, right? So, because we don't go to church on the same day as people do. That's why it's in the name Seventh-day Adventist. We usually go to church on Saturdays. The Sabbath starts on Friday night, in a Jewish family. We have Friday night Sabbath, and it ends on Saturday sundown. So it's an old school biblical Sabbath, Friday night to Saturday night. And I think something that'd be very familiar to, let's say, a Jewish person.
There's a particular sincerity in Adventists wanting to get it right according to the Bible.
And you can see it in the early roots. Like they really wanted to get, in that case, they wanted to get the second coming right. And there was charts. And
there's a prediction of Jesus coming in 1844.
Mm-hmm. And then, break it, breaking news. It didn't happen in 1844. And that is the start of the Adventist Church. And it's called the Great Disappointment.
Right? And
October 22nd. 1884.
Put it in the calendar.
Every Adventist knows this. It really do. It's really sad that we do.
It's really fun.
It's fun. but that's where it starts. It starts with this realization that God didn't come. Okay, then something must have happened that day. And so then there's an explanation of what happened. And then a Protestant Christian denomination sort of forms out of that group of people who are adamant that something very important happened on October 22nd, and they can prove it to you by charts and Daniel and Revelation.
And I don't think a whole lot of Adventists nowadays would hold to that.
Well,
some would. I think everyone knows that happened, but it doesn't really affect them. Mm-hmm. So
how do you guys play around with that? You're kind of lighthearted, and you seem to have this kind of comfort about talking about some of these things that a lot of people because you've experienced it your whole life, kind of snicker and laugh at. And you guys have a really good attitude about it. But there has to be another kind of sense of going on there. I mean, you guys also have a literalist interpretation of creation. Mm-hmm. Six days, it all happened that. I mean, some of this stuff, I mean, right out of Bill Maher, documentaries,
right.
I'm sure that he could go find some Adventist church fathers who would just spew this stuff and look totally ridiculous to 90% of people. Mm-hmm. How do you balance that? How do you kind of keep those two?
I think that, even though that's been the tradition for the last 200 years, there's a sense of people not 6 days, let's be open to science and evolution to our audience. Talking about the validity of evolution is groundbreaking for them.
Yeah, it's triggering.
It's triggering. And for you audience, talking about the inconsistencies of evolution might be the groundbreaking, but for us to bring people to that.
Yeah.
But
as a quick aside into Anthony's childhood, as a kid, my dad bought me this evangelical, I don't know if he bought or someone gave it to him. There were the recordings of this man who was an apologist for creationism, and his name was Kent Hovind. This is probably familiar. You're shaking your head. He's also in prison right now. He's in prison right now for evading taxes because he thinks that the government has – he's one of these admiralty law people where he doesn't think the government has – whatever. He now is crazy. But I grew up on – I watched those on repeat. And that was my sort of okay, look, evolution – I have an answer for everything. And that's very Adventist to have an answer for everything.
It's very conspiratorial, the way applying a literalist view of the Bible, Daniel and Revelation in particular, leads to this very parapolitical, a parapolitical fever dream of, the Catholic papacy is going to take over the world and change, make everyone worship on Sunday. And
it's when it happens.
And so it feels that our generation is that's a little paranoid, that's a little wild, and we're slowly opening up to other things, but there's this tension of how much do you open and how much do you lose with that.
I feel our generation is we're gonna put those things on hold. The mark of the beast and the Sunday law, and they sound a little crazy. We'll believe them. Sure. Let's put them on hold though. Mm-hmm. And how do we solve problems like, can women be ordained pastors?
Yeah.
Or are gay people, people? And I feel that's where, our you know, addition to the conversation has been noticed as of late, right?
Because okay, can you get there from here? You know, Anthony, you mentioned a minute ago that you had listened to my dialogue on Skeptico, is Christianity worth saving? You know, is the Seventh-day Adventist Church worth saving? Can you get there from here? Are you, in your attempt to kind of bring people along, maybe compromising too much in terms of the core issues?
So here's what's interesting when you ask it in terms of the Seventh-day Adventist Church. I think, yes, it is worth saving. But the Seventh-day Adventist Church as an institution is going to fight that change tooth and nail, probably into its own extinction, you know? And that's where things, from my point of view, get really interesting. Because Brian and I don't want to speak for you, but we do think that there is a Christian shift going on in this country. We do think that Christianity, Catholicism, sure, but Protestant Christianity is having an identity crisis, and the Christians of tomorrow are not going to be the Christians of yesterday. And is the Adventist Church going to survive that? That is a great question. Is it worth saving? Yes. Is it going to survive it? I don't know.
At the very least, the Adventist Church is this global network, this global community of people who care for each other. If you're Adventist from California and you get lost in Italy and you find a church, you might find someone who knows someone who knows someone who knew your parents, and they'll take care of you. The church is also very big on medicine and hospitals, sure, and education. With other like unconscious agendas as to what education is, but. There is this infrastructure.
As an aside, this is just something I heard, but it's fine. Other than the Catholic Church, the Adventist Church is the largest landowner, like denominations that exist.
And it does have this framework of, you know, biblical literalism, but it's also a framework of community. And so I think one of the things that we want to achieve with our podcast is to be able to find that sense of community and realize that that is worth saving. And that even if you take biblical literalism out of it, there are other narratives of the human experience that you can plug, like Ellen White fitting into the scene in upstate New York, or mysticism and Gnosticism in the Bible, and realizing that there is still a spiritual dimension to it that you can access and interact with without losing that sense of community. And so I don't know if it's worth saving, but I think it's worth.
Well, let me go all Bill Maher on you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're demanding a lot. Religious people are demanding a lot and asking a lot and really not giving back much in return. What you're demanding is special treatment, really. Over and over again, you're telling us that you deserve to be treated special in the marketplace of ideas, that you shouldn't be challenged on some of these beliefs that are highly questionable, that don't hold to a worldwide standard in terms of both morally as well as scientifically, and from multiple disciplines. You know, the scientific part that I'm going to go all Bill Maher on you. It's not only that it doesn't fit with one particular branch of science, because, you know, I can really get down on science. I mean, it's the it's refuted from so many different areas that you're asking us to treat your faith beliefs in a special way that we just wouldn't accept from anyone else who stepped into the public arena and said, this is true.
I don't understand what you mean by special treatment. What does that mean?
Well, you're asking us to kind of go along, wink and nod with this story that we're saying, on the other hand, we know can't possibly be true. You're not willing to apply the basic scrutiny that we would and anyone else who makes similar kind of claims about something they believe, whether it's, I mean, I hate to go all, you know, Santa Claus or anything else. We'd say, well, we really have to challenge that, whether there really is a Santa Claus, whether there really is an Easter Bunny. And when we challenge faith people on those kind of beliefs, it gets nasty really quick.
Well,
and,
no, I think that the pressure is being felt. I don't think that Christianity is coasting along in any capacity. That's why it's at a breaking point, I think, because of that pressure. Now, is it persecution? No, it's not. Okay, everyone calm down. You know, the Adventists are very good at, you know, highlighting, oh, Adventists are being persecuted. No, we're not. at least not in America.
Yeah.
but I think that the pressure is building. I think maybe that was true a few years ago. Maybe the Christian supremacy was unchallenged for a long time. I think to characterize it as going unchallenged now, look around. Churches are losing membership left and right. You know, maybe you guys are winning, you know.
there's an interesting tension. Loma Linda University, we have a friend who's studying medicine there, which is an Adventist institution. And this is just an illustration, but in a lecture about sexuality, they're told about a study that said the suicide of risks for transgender people goes down from 20% to 0.05% after operation. And I was blown away when my friend just casually mentioned that, because this is something that's being taught inside the austere institution of medicine, but you'll never hear that from a pulpit. And so I feel that is an interesting illustration of this interior struggle.
And in very real ways, not only are outsiders, as you would characterize them, maybe putting the pressure on institutions of faith, but I think now insiders are saying, hey, I am not comfortable with my institution doing harm to people. You know, this statistic right here that Brian mentioned is one of them, right? And I don't want those beliefs to be part of what I call my faith, you know? And so I think now more than ever, you're seeing members even now saying, hey, maybe we shouldn't have sexist beliefs. Maybe we shouldn't have transphobic, homophobic beliefs. And you're not only seeing this in our church, you're seeing this in the Methodist Church, you see this in the United Church of Christ. They're having conferences where they're voting on, hey, are we going to be accepting and affirming? And some people within those denominations don't want to be, you know, and at least in the Methodist, for example, they're going to have a conference this spring, and they might split. There might be two branches of the Methodist Church. And so this struggle is getting, if anything, it's intensifying, and it's going internally.
I think this is a roundabout way of agreeing with you that institutions of faith do need this pressure, not so much, you know, nailing to the 95 theses to the door, but it's being felt on the inside, and I think it's making plenty of people think, and it's overdue, but I think it's worth pushing for it, and that's why we have a podcast at the moment trying to do that.
No, and it's great that you do. And I really think I took things in the wrong direction there, because number one, to me, it's not about the institutions, and it never has been about the institutions. And the more we talk about the institutions, the religious institutions, the further we get away from the real question of spirituality, exactly, and how we experience spirituality. And people who are interested in that experience, whose lives are driven by understanding and further expanding that experience, like my life is, I think often are bewildered by all this talk about institutions that just seem to over and over again get in the way of people having these experiences. So let me rewind a little bit. And when I say, is Christianity worth saving? I think the way I originally intended it in that show, and I hope the way that it came out, is that why is it necessary? I mean, it's really cool that if you travel to a foreign country and get really sick, that you have a network, you know, that you can kind of tie into. That's awesome on a practical level. But on a spiritual level, if that is based on some things that are not true in the way that we normally think about things being true, have you kind of made some compromises there that may inhibit or may limit your spiritual growth?
I struggled with that question. Taking a class on mysticism at Berkeley with this very weird mystical guy who I deeply admire. But why don't I study Sufism or pick up Zen Buddhism? And the answer that I came up with was, because the Christian, the Adventist, but Christian, the Christian language that I grew up with is the most accessible language for me to interact with the spiritual. And so in using religion as a language to interact with that which is beyond, I think that it's worth interrogating and learning how to interact, challenge, and accept. I don't know. I'm trying to think of an example.
I think you're right on it, Brian. And now I got to pull in Anthony with this line I love from your show. Right. And he knows I'm going to do it. Yeah. But, you guys are bantering back and forth in this one mm-hmm. episode. And at one point, you're kind of spewing all this mystical kind of stuff there, Brian.
That's my job.
Mm-hmm. And Anthony comes back and says, how do you even call yourself a Christian anymore? And I think that is the edge that is interesting to me. You know, how mm-hmm. do you call yourself a Christian anymore if you go too far off the reservation? Is that a concern? What did you mean by that, Anthony? To what extent? You're a lawyer. To what extent do you?
Right. So that is informing it, right? Like, there's definitions and I think that's where your first question, I think, is important to bring back up. Science, a deep, profound experience based in reason, and then a deep, profound experience based in spirituality. And that's the trick, right? How do you mesh, your physical life, your day-to-day life, with this higher, plane that we believe exists, and where do those two worlds touch? And for a lot of people, myself included, the avenue from where those two worlds touch is the person of Jesus, right? Mm-hmm. That is how I, my physical being, is connected to something beyond myself. look at that. and for millions of people, and I'm not saying, that because of this one thing, Christianity gets a free pass forever. But for millions of people, this story of Jesus and this person of Jesus and this idea has been the path to this metaphysical experience. And for a lot of people, it's been the only path. It's been the only way they've been connected to something beyond And the way I think that the story of Christianity should preserve is because it holds in it this idea of redemption. And I feel that that is something missing from any of the other maybe coherent ways of looking at the world. I look at other philosophies of being and I don't see a rationale for redemption. I don't see a rationale for justice. I don't see a rationale for striving to be better, even though maybe we won't be. But
really, hold on, I got to jump in there because I mm-hmm. hear Christians say stuff like that all the time, and I just don't find it to be at all true. I mean, I find it in so many different wisdom traditions that I just kind of stumble across, and don't ask me to kind of quote chapter and verse right here. But I mean, isn't that just common themes throughout not only great spiritual traditions, but great literature, is this whole idea of redemption?
Well, yeah.
So why do Christians want to grab that and say, we're somehow unique? No, I got this from Mark Booth, too.
I think there's something, you're right. I think there's something universal and very, very human about it. I think what Brian was trying to say, and what I think I'm going to kind of latch onto, is that Christianity is the best articulation of that. Not that it's not available, elsewhere. Mm-hmm. But this idea that man needs to be redeemed. And I know that Christians don't own that concept, mm-hmm. but that I feel I think because of the fact that it exists in other cultures shows just how innate that is inside of us, this idea to look beyond. And yes, Christianity, the institution has never done it right, probably. But the person of Jesus, I think, if you look at the example, I think the person of Jesus has a lesson for every person on the planet, even if they heard of him or not. Mm-hmm. And I think a person could have lived with this connected, to a higher power, had that experience without ever hearing about Jesus. But when they did feel that, they experienced not Jesus, but they experienced the essence of it.
I feel, actually, I don't have an articulated answer that I thought I did.
Yeah, neither did I.
But I feel, and I'm not putting my meaning or faith in the primacy of the Jesus story, but as far as a story of redemption, the Jesus narrative has a primacy for my lived experience. That is the story that I grew up with and, imaginally experienced being read and shown these pictures as a child. And so I find the weight of it to be very subjective and personal. And that's all I'm capable of putting my spiritual experience on. Just that it is mine and this is my foot in the door.
I think that's pretty cool, buddy. I mean, you nailed one there. I mean, the primacy of your personal experience versus the primacy of the historical Jesus. Because you guys have heard enough of these shows, and I kind of rail on the historical Jesus. Because, and I know we've kind of danced around that, and I don't want to dive into that too far because it really requires a lot of painstaking work. But it does come down to that at some point. It does come down to it matters. And I think that it also matters side by side with that is the social engineering aspect of Christianity. And I, as I've told you on this show, that I think we can trace that all the way back. But even if you don't want to go all the way back, you can sure see it all over in our culture, in our lives, in your young lives, in my old life. We can see it over and over again, how it is used to kind of co-opt cultural trends, shape cultural trends. And that's got to be worrisome, because that has to get in the way of our genuine spiritual experience, because by design, it's spiritual engineering at the same time that it's social engineering.
Definitely.
Are you worried about that? How do you think you need to protect yourself against that? And that, can you do that from inside of an organization like you're in, or does it make it for someone like me on the outside who occasionally goes to church still for various reasons and just am dumbfounded that I'm even there because it's just so ridiculous. But you know, I just can't imagine. I usually walk out. I read. It's just so insane. And you know why? Because it's the classic old thing. They say two, three things that you totally agree with about community, about I love the stuff we're doing to help people, about love your neighbor, all the rest of this. And then they slip one in that's totally off the frickin' wall, you know, about Jesus this. And, you know, it's just like insane stuff, you know. So does it make it harder to resist the spiritual social engineering from inside of a tradition like yours?
That's a paranoia of mine that, and you know, the fact that the Bible has like beautiful literature and a lot of entangled meanings, but at the same time as great dense literature and mythology as it is, it was ministered throughout the world through very loving and intentional people, but also by the sword and by the gun. And so I think a fun tension that that helps me get through that is that Christianity itself started as this very anti-imperial movement towards spirituality.
Maybe, but
yeah. Well, there are like Gnostic anti-imperial movements that are interwoven inside. So to know that some of that is there, that can be the ethos with which I try to navigate the world, my spirituality, and those of others around me. And so for me, trying to broaden the definitions of what spirituality and religion are, to say no, you know, like someone having a UFO encounter or seeing a ghost and then saying it was a demon or it was an angel, to try to broaden the vocabulary of that which we can describe spiritual experiences, and trying to bring the excluded into the conversation. That's what I'm wrestling with. That's how I can try to navigate it. And it's tough with other people, but
I look at the last 2,000 years and Christianity has won. Like, I don't want to quote a now disgraced comedian, but the Christians have won big time. Like, how do you know? What year is it? You know? And I think that Christians today don't know what to do with that. Mm-hmm. I think we apologize. And we should. That was what they set out to do. They were supposed to take over the world, right? That was the Great Commission. I think we did it the wrong way.
But no, hold on, Anthony, because, you know, I mean, I don't want to go too far down that path because mm-hmm. I don't feel a need to kind of jump in there and say, mm-hmm. no, it was a social engineering project from the beginning.
Well,
where that really shows up mm-hmm. is with Constantine at 400. So we can go back to
saying you're right, and that's my point.
But I don't think it's
being a social engineering project. That's why it's on every single continent now, including Antarctica, probably.
I don't think so. I mean, just a slight twist on that. My read of it is it was expedient at the time. It was like, shit, why not? If we can get it, we can control everybody with this thing, and mm-hmm. we don't have to go to war, and we don't have to do it with the sword. It was a one-time thing. They weren't thinking that they're going to win, keep winning, you know, like, win. It just became a tool that later generations picked up and said, hey, let's go back. It's our go-to. And then it got, this is my read of that history. And all along, there were people who were having these genuine spiritual experiences who were saying, hold on, there's something really here. It's funny, but I think there's a lot of parallels with the psychedelic movement that we've talked about on this show, where, you know, you introduce this substance and it's the evil CIA psyop guys who are saying, hey, man, maybe we can mind control everybody and maybe we can use it as a truth serum. And meanwhile, these people are going, you don't know what you have here. This is my
God experience, and they don't know how to do that. So I think that is a theme that we see over and over and over again, which is that the control group, they're using it for very sinister kind of, but materialistic kind of means. And there's these other people who are having these spiritual experiences.
Yeah, I think there's always going to be that tension between, all right, this is how we're going to take over the world. And wait a minute, no, this is supposed to be a religion and a philosophy of love. And I think the story of Christianity is a battle between those two groups. And it's still going on today. There's these people who want to continue this idea of control because it's been good to them, because it's been good to the people that look like them, the people that believe like them, the people that love like them. And of course they're going to want to keep that because life has been good to them. Forget all the people they've oppressed through what was supposed to be a redeeming philosophy. So I think every Christian should be outraged that our faith has been used like this.
It's very poignant, like just in the narrative of the Bible, in Genesis, we start off with this nomadic people that are terrified of cities, and cities like Sodom and Gomorrah deserve to be burned, or the Tower of Babel deserves to be destroyed. And then at the end of Revelation, we can only imagine God coming by sending us another city. And it feels like that tension of control is something deeply entrenched and a constant, a constant tension throughout the narrative of the Christian story.
Okay, guys, maybe let me take it one more place before we end it. And that's, how far are you willing to go? So Brian, you threw out the UFO term. Does that potentially completely change the paradigm for Christians? I talk about on this show, near-death experience, which a lot of people, one of my complaints is that Christians try and then co-opt that and say, well, that's a Christian experience and anyone who doesn't have it. So that's probably less controversial, but what developments in this kind of fringy spirituality, and I'm going to throw the UFO thing in there, push the limits of your paradigm, your Christian Adventist paradigm?
I mean,
I'm the mystical, whimsical one. So yes. I'm open to all of that, but it's a tense discussion. It's a weird tension to bring up in conversation because, at the same time, people are believing that, God sends angels to the world.
Right.
And then you tell them about John Dee summoning angels and they're like, that's not angels.
Right.
And
Adventists are very comfortable with the fact that angels and demons exist. I don't think we're comfortable with like ghosts and stuff.
But yeah, ghosts is a particularly interesting one in that one of the things that Adventists at least, are proud of is that their model of consciousness seems to match scientific consensus of, once you die, you're asleep and then Jesus will wake you up later. You don't have an immortal soul. Mm-hmm. You'll be woken up in the future. And so I've met a couple of Adventists who have had near-death experiences. One was the daughter of a pastor and she became a doula.
We're trying to get her.
We're going to get her on the show.
Well, Anthony, what does push the edges for you? NDE, OBE, magic, chaos magic, UFOs?
Right. I think that one's fascinating. I do think that human consciousness hasn't been explored at all, I think. I think we haven't even scratched the surface on that. And there's so much there that I think would fit very neatly in like an Adventist worldview and sort of like a fringy like conspiracy theorist worldview. I actually think we have more in common than you would think.
The different presuppositions as to how it operates.
Yeah. Magic. I think Personally, I am not afraid of like the occult and magic and all that stuff. I do believe it's real. But
I mean, magic is completely intertwined with Christianity, right? So many ways that it's just almost ridiculous that Christians don't realize it.
And that's where I find an exciting new ground, I feel.
I don't know if it's exciting. It just isn't exciting for Christians because it just isn't. Once you open to that, one of the things you have is you have all these saints running around throughout history. Now, this isn't just first century. This goes all the way through that are doing some really, really bizarre stuff. Mm-hmm. And what do you do with that? And what do you do with that when they do become saints and are ordained by the church? Maybe not the church.
Or prophetesses, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, Adventists, like other Protestants, I think they would just chalk up saints and all other weirdness as superstition. And it's tough to talk about.
We have a prophetess who, swears that she communicated with God and with angels.
Visited Jupiter and saw the aliens there.
And there's the room is in still, about an hour up north from here where we're sitting, where she had that experience and she saw her room fill with angels. Nurses from the nearby hospital, a little bit up the hill, sometimes at night could see a glow.
Really? Is that a thing?
It's 100% a thing. You take the tour. that could see a glow from her house. So yes, Adventists, are very like, oh no, of course not. No, we don't believe in that. And yet we have our prophetess who is flirting with all of this. And I see a lot of exciting potential there.
Yeah. And so I think that's one thing that we're trying to talk about. I mean, I'm surprised to hear him say that he's okay with the occult, because it feels like once we say that out loud, we lose a lot of credibility from our communities. Mm. And so we try to define a little
bit. You ought to define a little bit what we mean when we say occult. I mean, occult means hidden. I mean, what are you really saying? I don't think you're embracing anything Luciferian or totally. Anything like that. I mean,
but off the bat, you raise the hackles and suspicions of. Mm-hmm. Of your parents, of your family, the community that you grew up in. And so we're trying to slowly talk about it or open it up for discussion. But it's a very weird strategic requiring map to navigate. Mm-hmm. So that we want to get those NDE survivors who stayed in and left the church and try to find that within our own experiences. Mm. It's tough though.
No, I think for a long time, reflections of our own spirituality or of other people's spirituality have been filtered through, the machine and have been, fed to us every Sabbath, as cookie cutter testimonies, right, of how they already bolster what the church already teaches. And I think set free from that, and if people are allowed to experience their spirituality the way they see fit for their lives, right, and that includes loving who they want and worshiping in the way they want, and if we just could convince, in my ideal world, we convince the Adventist Church to take a little bit more hands-off approach on people's, getting inside people's spirituality. Because you'd be surprised the level of engineering that goes into an Adventist Church service, mm-hmm. Because everything is choreographed, There's been huge splits on whether to have drums in church, right? it's just very silly things.
The bar is pretty low.
Yeah.
Who gets to
deliver the sermon, I do think the Adventist Church is unique. It has a very beautiful message to tell the world. I think it's gone way too far on this whole control thing. And I think we should pull back. And that's what the Adventist is about, hopefully.
Tell folks where they can find the podcast, The Adventist, and what you guys are up to in the near future. You kind of tipped your hand with an exciting idea of interviewing Adventist NDE experiencer. What else is coming up?
Yeah, if you know any, please get them in touch with us also. We only know two now. It was one before and two today. So feel free to follow us at Badventism on Twitter and Instagram. You can email us at thebadventist@gmail.com. And then you can find us through there also. I'm on Twitter at Brian Nashid. I don't know if you want to, I'm fine with you including that.
He has weird tweets.
Yeah. and we're some, the Adventist Church is trying to talk about sexuality in a more open and inviting way. We don't think they go far enough.
Laughably failing at it. It's actually.
And so we have a small series of Christianity and sexuality coming up. And so,
with the mantra of like, hey, I know you guys like to control things, including, you know,
ease up a bit.
Yeah. Relax. This is weird.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I think there's probably little overlap between the skeptical audience and the Badventist audience. But if any of the skeptical audience,
this is the overlap.
Yeah, it's just me.
Actually now it's us too.
But, but if a skeptical audience has any Christian friends or relatives, hopefully we can be like the bridge for them.
No, you'd be surprised how I've listened to like a number of Alex's podcasts. My dad would love your podcast. Oh. No, really. Oh my, like it's very much in his like vein of thinking.
Hopefully you get a bunch of Adventist listeners after this. We'll see. Let us know if that happens.
I will let the world know. Yeah. Hey guys, it's been awesome having you on, and I appreciate it, and I look forward to, you know, checking into the Badventist. One of the problems going on right now is there's so much great content, and I would include you guys in there, but I am going to make sure to peek and poke in there, especially on some of these great episodes that are coming up. So thanks again so much for joining me on Skeptico.
Thanks so much, very, Alex. Very much. Thanks for having us on. Really appreciate it.
Thanks again to Brian and Anthony for joining me today on Skeptico. The one question I tee up is Christianity worth saving? Can we really brush aside all the tradition, all the history that's woven into the fabric of our country here in the U.S., into Western culture? Can we really brush all that aside merely because much of it is a social engineering control psyop? I mean, what if the best parts aren't that? What if the best parts are, as Brian said, a language for accessing the spiritual? I don't know on this one. I keep bouncing back and forth. I thought I knew, but I think I don't know. Come play with me on this one. Connect, Skeptical Forum. Love seeing so many new faces there, so many bright, intelligent, brilliant people there. Please come join us. I do have some really good shows coming up, I think. Stay with me for all of that. Please tell someone who needs to know about this show to tune in. Show them how to download it. Show them how to listen to it. Show them how to use Spotify. But that's going to do it for this episode of Skeptico. Do take care, and until next time, bye for now.